Hello, I'm Kate Jabot. Welcome to this special series from BFBS SITREP, The World in 2026. This time we look in depth at global threats and potential flashpoints for new conflict over the next 12 months. Shashank Joshi, defence editor for The Economist, tells us where he's watching and shares his assessment of the state of the world going into the new year.
It's been a really tumultuous year again, and when I think back, I think primarily to three really big conflicts. One of them is, of course, the bombing of Iran by America and Israel in the summer of this year, which was a momentous event, one which has been anticipated for more than a decade in some ways. The other is, of course, the ongoing Ukraine conflict, but also the acceleration of diplomacy around that conflict towards the end of this year in 2025. And that's been a really significant development. I think for the first time, the most advanced, mature diplomacy we've seen around Ukraine since the early part of the conflict in 2022. And I think the third one that comes to mind is India-Pakistan, which, of course, in May, after a terrorist attack in India, fought a brief air and missile campaign for several days, one which was the most far-reaching India-Pakistan war since 1971. So that was a very, very important development in the subcontinent. To that list of three, you could also add things like the war in Sudan, which, of course, has been one of the most, I think, perhaps the most destructive conflict in terms of human lives in 2025. And you could add perhaps potential flashpoints like those between Thailand and Cambodia, the Myanmar civil war, and also the clashes in the South China Sea between China and the Philippines. But the list goes on and on. It's been another very, very rough and competitive and friction-filled year.
And in your assessment, how great is the risk of a new significant conflict breaking out in 2026?
I think the risk remains low in absolute terms, but high in relative terms, by which I mean, I think the prospect of any serious state-on-state conflict in 2026 that is on top of those that we've already discussed, limited, fairly low. It's lower than 50%. But of course, I think it is going up. And when I look at the list of potential conflicts, I think the two that worry me the most are, first of all, the prospect of a resumption in fighting between Israel and Iran, particularly if Iran seeks to rebuild its missile program, as it is doing now, and Israel decides it needs to strike again to try to suppress any rearmament in Iran, whether of its conventional forces or perhaps even of its nuclear forces, its nuclear program, I should say, rather than nuclear forces. And then I guess the second thing that I look at very carefully is in the Pacific, the South China Sea, particularly in those jockeying for advantage around those contested China-Philippines territories, notably Second Thomas Shoal, which is a Filipino-controlled reef in the South China Sea, but China has repeatedly challenged the Philippines' control of that. And that has looked very, very tense this year. And again, if I was looking at potential flashpoints for 2026, I would certainly have that high on my list. And I guess the final one I'd just add is the prospect of an escalation, you could say, between China and Japan, where tensions have been rising in the East China Sea, a part of the world where we perhaps don't pay as much attention, notably around the Senkaku Islands. And that has come about as a result of Japan's prime minister talking more publicly about the role that Japan might play for the defense of Taiwan. And China has responded very aggressively. I'd expect some of those tensions to continue into 2026.
And Shashank, this time last year, we were just getting our heads around the fall of the Assad regime in Syria. President Ahmed al-Sharaa has made it through 12 months in charge, but there have been significant bumps along the way. How concerned should we be about Syria in 2026?
I'm reasonably optimistic about Syria. Of course, we did see the new regime consolidate itself. We saw extraordinary diplomatic normalization of this regime with Sharaa even visiting Donald Trump and looking, you know, cordial and jokey with him. So that's a remarkable thing to have happened. On the other hand, we've also seen really unpleasant massacres take place of minorities in Syria on the coast, some of them carried out by government-aligned forces, although not at the behest of the government, we think. So there are these simmering ethnic tensions, these sectarian tensions in Syria. There are also questions over how inclusive the new Syrian government really intends to be democratically in reaching out to its opponents, reaching out to minorities. But by and large, You know, although Israel is pushing into Syria, carving out buffer zones, bombing sites in Syria, and that will be a source of continued tension. I'm optimistic about the political direction of Syria and the fact that it will, I think, not relapse into a state of complete civil conflict, which is very much would have been a possibility looking at this from the vantage point of a year ago.
And next door to Syria, it would still be hard to say there is peace between Israel and Gaza, even though it's not the all-out war it was 12 months ago. What happens there in 2026?
I think the question is, how easy will it be to implement this peace deal? And one of the questions will be around the prospect of an international force inside Gaza. Who will contribute to it? Who will take the risk of putting their forces on the ground? Are they willing to take the risk of attempting to disarm Hamas, a group that will resist disarmament? I think also the other question is how far Israel will test the boundaries of this ceasefire. We've already seen Israel conduct a strike inside Gaza recently that caused a lot of, I think, opposition from Arab states, saying Israel is playing fast and loose with the terms of the ceasefire. So this is a very fragile agreement, and I think there's no guarantee it will hold through 2026 at all.
And Iran, you told us this time last year, correctly, that the US and Israel might strike Iran's nuclear program. It came to pass after a very bruising year for the Iranian regime. Will they push back in 2026?
I think the Iranian regime is still in a process of licking its wounds, of rebuilding the things that it lost. So rebuilding its missile arsenal that it was expended and that some of it was struck by Israelis, perhaps trying to extract some of its nuclear material from under the rubble and thinking about how and when and whether it can rebuild the beginnings of a nuclear program without being detected. And of course, also potentially trying to send support to Hezbollah, which in Lebanon, the Lebanese militant group, which was struck very badly, decapitated, its leadership killed, its missile stockpiles also destroyed. And I think Iran is in no position to seek a major confrontation in 2026. It's just weak. Its economy is in trouble. Its politics is divided. I think it will be trying to actually seek a kind of a deal with America over its nuclear program. It really will not want a war that could see it its regime severely weakened and depleted again.
And clearly, the focus on the British and NATO sphere will remain on Ukraine and Russia in 2026. But where else should we be watching for the next conflict and why?
Well, I think that it's always the small wars that tend to surprise us. And from a European perspective, you would be looking at North Africa and particularly the rise of jihadists in North Africa, filling vacuums left by the withdrawal of French forces, the distraction of American forces, Russia and Russian mercenaries supporting them. And I think that jihadist resurgence in North Africa, particularly in the Sahel, is a source of severe concern to those southern European countries like Italy, looking down across the Mediterranean. And you know, we've seen how jihadist activity in just recently in an ISIS-inspired attack in Bondi Beach in Sydney can surprise us, can still has the capacity to seize the headlines. And is that more than a large, you know, Russian attack, I think, that would be the focus for the first part of 2026?
And are we responding to that already? And if not, what have we to do?
Well, I think it's a question of intelligence with these things, having the intelligence capacity to focus on these problems where not many people are interested. And if you have limited intelligence analysts and resources like drones, satellite coverage, you are always going to focus it on the more pressing priority scenarios, such as the Russian military buildup in Eastern Europe. So I think it's a question of making sure that there's some watching brief, some limited capacity on those lesser conflicts. And that will always fall down to the countries that have a longer history and interest in those places, countries like France. It's not easy in a time when defense spending is rising, but it's not rising as quickly as it needs to meet that target of 3.5% by 2035. We know that British defense spending, for example, is going to be very tightly constrained even next year. So I'm not confident, really, that we're able to cover all of these bases. I still think that there are gaps that will be left, and leaving gaps is a natural part of prioritization. That's what strategy is. It's about knowing which bits to prioritize and which bits you unfortunately have to accept you won't be watching as closely.
And we've seen tensions between Cambodia and Thailand spill over into conflict. How will that move forward, do you think? And how concerned should we be by that?
Well, it's not a great power conflict in the sense of Russia-NATO or China-America, so naturally it gets less attention. But, you know, these are pretty sizable armed forces, particularly on, you know, Thailand is a serious power in Southeast Asia. And this is, these are countries that are, partners of the West in some ways. They're also critical swing states in the competition for influence in the Indo-Pacific region. They're partners of China economically. So I think any prospect of conflict on this border is a real source of concern. It has potential impact to spread refugees in other parts of Southeast Asia. It can draw in outside powers. I think it's a conflict also, of course, about which we have very little intellectual capacity to understand the conflict. You know, if we're looking for experts on the Thai military, I can probably, you know, count them on the one hand, those available in the West. So it's a really difficult conflict to understand and follow. That means when it erupts, if it does erupt, we're often not in a very good position to understand the ebb and flow of what could happen.
President Trump has claimed to have ended and prevented many conflicts in 2025. Views certainly vary on that. What do you think his effect will be in 2026? Will it be substantive or performative at one big show?
Well, I think he will have a huge influence on the course of Ukraine negotiations because, of course, if America chooses to cut intelligence or stop selling arms to Europe to give to Ukraine, then I think that would have a significant effect on Ukraine's longer-term battlefield prospects, and it could force Ukraine to the table under more disadvantageous conditions. I also think we'll be watching closely to see what President Trump does with his national defense strategy and his so-called posture review, which will determine how many American troops and forces are sitting where and whether any of them are pulled away from Europe. He will have a profound influence on that question. And I think everyone is watching and waiting to see how this defense strategy plays out.
Shashank Joshi, great to speak to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me again.
Defense Explained. This is SITREP.